Keisha, what's everybody good for? Yes, so we are entering, you know, somewhat of the home stretch here. If we're going to finish the book, all we have to do is live by it, and we're doing fine.
Does the home stretch mean that once we finish, we start again?
Well, I'm not sure. But we'll see. But certainly it's kedai to chazer it. Okay, so we are in Perek Chaf Dalet. And again, I'm going to skip around just a little bit, not too much. But I want to start with tonight, Pasuk Tes. I'm sorry, Pasuk Yud. Pasuk Yud is a Pasuk that Chazal are quite fond of. They quote it in a number of Midrashim and the like, and the Gemara Brachos has a drush on this Pasuk and the like. And I will tell you that before we had the newer Gemaras that give you the Nekudas in every Pasuk, everyone that learned the Gemara, including me, we always mispronounce this pasuk because it's a little. And so now you'll know how to pronounce it correctly when you encounter it in Maseches Brachos. And that is pasuk yud, Perek Chaf Dalet, pasuk yud, Hisrapisa biyom tzara, tsar kochecha. So Hisrapisa is a lashon of rifyain, which is weakness. Hisrapisa, if you are weak. If your hands are loose, you don't have a grip, right? Rifyon Yadayim is a weakening of the hands. On the day of Tzara, on the day of challenge, on the day of sorrow, Tzar Kochecha, your strength will be diminished. So L'chaira seems to be what you call a tautology. Obviously, if you're weak, your strength is diminished. So the simple meaning of the pasuk is actually what the Vilna Gaon says, L'fi Pshuto, although he will then give another meaning. And that is, this refers to a person who sees the suffering of other people and is indifferent to them. People are suffering, not a big deal. And even if he doesn't simply say, I don't care, even if he does something, but he does something without enthusiasm, he makes a half-hearted attempt, it's not something that really bothers him, that's called hisrafisa. You are very weak and unenthusiastic about helping other people in the day of their tzara. So the mida keneged mida is that the indifference and the callousness that we show to others on the day of their tzara, tsar kochacha, our own strength will be diminished when we face tzaras of our own. Because once again, as we see throughout Chazal, mida keneged mida, Hashem deals with us the way we deal with others. The Baal Shem Tov says that is the meaning of the pasuk in Tehillim, Hashem Tzilcha, Hashem is your shadow. Wherever you move, your shadow moves with you. So too, a person is indifferent to the plight of the others. Kavyachol, it's not true indifference. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be Mesalek, his protection from him. And indeed, therefore, it's connected to this. Hatzel, right, look at the next, you have to read the two pasukim together. Hatzel Lekuchim Lamaves, meaning this is what you're indifferent about. If you are indifferent in terms of saving those who are being taken to their death, umatim lehereg, and those that are being brought to slaughter, im tachsoch, if you hold yourself back, so that is where it'll be, tsar kochecha. Now, of course, keep in mind that death and hereg are not only literal, but there are many things that are called death. Poverty is considered to be death. Malbin Pnei Chavero, embarrassing somebody publicly, is considered to be a form of a person experiencing death. So here, we're not talking about that you're the bad guy. We're not talking about you're the one that's embarrassing. We're not talking about you're the one that is stealing. We're not talking about you're the one that is murdering. The only avla that is being described here is not the avla of the actual sinner. That is, you know, we had that many, many times. But rather, it refers to the indifference of the bystander who doesn't really care. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Hisrapisa b'yayim tzara, from this type of tzara, tsar kochecha, your own strength is going to be diminished you will not be able to deal with your own problems. Which again, that's the paradox, because often a person says, I don't have the time or the energy to be concerned with other people's problems because I have my own problems. Right? That's exactly it. In other words, if the person's rationale is, I need my energy for me. But what's the answer? By your not caring about others, your energy and ability for you is going to be diminished. Paradoxically, by caring for others, the Eibishter is going to give you more koach. Mechlal lava tashmeya hein. By telling me the negative, with indifference, your power will be constricted. The implication is, by giving, your powers will be increased. This is what people say to what parents say, right? You know, parents, Baruch Hashem, Kain Hara, have very, very large families, right? You see in Eretz Yisrael. And they say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for every child, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you more koach than you would have had otherwise. Meaning to say, the koach moves with the child.
Is the kedusha of the shir puts in the mind of the maybe chazak chazak in his chazek.
Yeah.
You made yourself strong in his chazek, and you will be strengthened. In other words, you made this parallel opposite to chalash,
right,
or weakening.
Rifyan. Yeah.
So chazak chazak in his chazek, and you will be strong. You strengthen yourself to do something for a Kodesh Baruch Hu with Torah.
Right.
In his chazek, and you will be strong.
Right. Yeah, it's very, very, very true. Very true. So that which we give to others comes back to us, and it's mechazek us in many, many ways. That is the pashut pshat of the pasuk, and again, it's obviously ein mikri yosin vei pshuto, and it's basically saying that don't think by not caring about others you're going to have more koach for yourself. And again, the mefarshim bring in, this was kind of what Mordechai said to Esther, right? Mordechai said to Esther, when Esther expressed a certain fear, how can I go to the Melech Achashverosh has not called me. So Mordechai said, Im hacharesh tacharishi b'yeis azos. If you keep quiet, if you don't do what you can to save Klal Yisrael, the Jews are going to be saved anyway, but you're going to be destroyed. Do not think you're going to save yourself by the indifference that you show others. It's going to knock you down. Now, the Gra, however, does have an interesting alternative pshat, which does not contradict, and that is, this is referring to fighting my own Yetzer Hara. And that is, a person sometimes may have an attitude that my Yetzer Hara is too strong for me to defeat. I might as well surrender to that fight. Now, if you recall, throughout the book of Mishlei, the Gra talked about two primary Yetzer Haras that a person has, out of which come all of the averus that we do. There is the Yetzer Hara of Taiva, with Taiva, lust, and there's the Yetzer Hara of Kas, anger. This is called the Tavani and the Kasani. And the way the Gra explains it, that Taiva is essentially passive. That is the desire for laziness, for comfort, for ease. Taiva is not that which goes out and wants to make a lot of money. Taiva means you want to sit at home all day and watch soap operas while eating chocolate and the like. It's not the way we often think. We often think taiva is, you know. It says taiva is totally passive and indolent and lazy. Kas is really connected to ego and covet. And therefore kas is connected to gaiva. It's even connected to monetary accumulation, because what pushes people to make deals, to work, you know, 18 hours a day, to travel all over the world, to make billions of dollars? He says it actually is not the push that we call taiva. Taiva would not indicate that you want to work, you know, 18 hours a day. Rather, that comes kas. Kas is the idea of power over people, control over people, and the like. So he says that the two negative motivators that lead a person to sin are the koach of taiva and the koach of kas. Now he then says that taiva is called death, because essentially, you know, you just want to be dead, essentially, meaning you're killing your neshama, you're not responding to ruchnius. That is a living death. That is called mavis. Kas, on the other hand, since kas involves the victimization of other people, kas is called hered, killing others. So, when the person says, Hitzrafisa, So the Yain Sara, the day of adversity, the day of suffering, Sara actually means an adversity, that is the day in which you must confront your Yetzer Hara, which is every day, really. In other words, if you are weak on that day of Sara, now, then Sar Kochecha, paradoxically, God will make you weaker, because this is the rule, Habal Atayer, when you want to purify yourself, Misayanosa, when you don't want to do it, then paradoxically, your powers are going to be weakened. And that's what it says. When it says, Hatzel Lekuchin Lamaveth, to save those who are taken to death, meaning that is to fight the struggle against Taiva, Umatim Laharegim Tachsoch, and not to hold back, to save those who would be killed, Hereg. Hereg is an expression of Kas, right? So this was referring not so much, again, it doesn't replace the Pshat, according to this explanation, we are not referring to helping other people, we are referring to helping yourself, which of course is the primary person we're supposed to help. There is a din of Chayecha Kaidman, right? Even in Ruchnius, right? If you only have enough water for one person, and you're walking in the desert, and if you share the water, you both will die. So the halacha is that you have to be concerned with your life. Now it's true, as Hillel says, "Imena ni li mili." If I am not for myself, who will be for me? "Uchshani li atzmi." If I am only for myself, ma'ani. What type of person is that? Of course, a person has to care about others. A person has to live to do chesed for others. Rav Chaim Voloshiner says a person was created in the world to do chesed for others. But at the same time, it has to be not at the expense of his own ruchnius. And therefore the Gra moves this from, instead of emphasizing a concern for others, which again is also 100% true, it is referring to the inner struggle that we face with the Yetzer Hara, both in terms of the koach of taiva, and in terms of the koach of kas, the tavani and the kasani, and things become a self-fulfilling prophecy. If a person believes he doesn't have the power to wage this war, then his powers become diminished, because that which you think you can't do, in point of fact, you now become unable to do, because you think you cannot do it. You know, they say a famous story for Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman of Breslov, again, I hope the Grah will forgive bringing in Chassidus, but we've done it before. That Rav Nachman of Breslov, you know, used to, in addition to his teachings in the Likutei Maran, again, Rav Nachman of Breslov didn't write anything, everything was written. Rav Nachman of Breslov had a Talmud Muvik, Rav Nassan, who really followed him around all the time, and everything from Rav Nachman is essentially Rav Nassan's writing, just like the Arizal, like the Arizal earlier. The Arizal didn't write anything at all, but everything from the Arizal is Rav Chaim Vital, who wrote, and that's why, that's all interesting, controversy in itself, because the Arizal had other Talmidim as well, and some of those other Talmidim wrote different versions of the Arizal's writings. And although, if we can talk about the mainstream of Kabbalah, I mean, we're all so far from that. But the mainstream of Kabbalah is totally Rav Chaim Vital. But the real Mekubalim are also familiar with alternative writings, many of which have not even been published. There are still manuscripts being handed down and the like. So there are different versions. In fact, the Gra himself sometimes is cholek on the Kisvei Ha'ari. But it's not so much necessarily that he's cholek on the Kisvei Ha'ari, but he's cholek on Rav Chaim Vital's interpretation of the Arizal and the like. But these are, you know, these are matters that are beyond us. But Rav Nachman as well, everything from Rav Nachman we know from Rabbi Nassan. So Rav Nachman has direct teachings, Likutei Maran, and then Rav Nachman also has stories. Stories, right? Rav Nachman was a storyteller as well. And in many Breslov Minyanim, you know, they tell the stories and you have to do it in a certain way with a certain niggun and a certain style that you can't just do it casually. Although the stories don't explain themselves, they're just stories, but the Breslovers have a Messiah that there's many Ramazim of Kabbalah in the stories themselves. And when Rav Nachman was asked, you know, why he taught by story, so he said, well, a story is better than a teaching. Because if I give a teaching, if you understand it, you got it. If you don't understand it, you don't have anything. When I tell you a story, if you get the meaning, then Baruch Hashem, you got it. If you don't get the meaning, you have a story. So he says stories intrinsically are good because you always walk away with something.
It's not only that you have a story, but someday you may get the meaning.
And you may get the meaning as well. That's right. That's right. So it's something that sticks in your mind, right. And the meaning may come to you, may come to you later. That's right. That's very good. So one of the famous stories about that Reb Nachman says is about the prince that thought he was a rooster. It's a very famous story. In fact, you'll find it in children's books, but the origin is Rav Nachman, that a prince thought he was a rooster, and he was crawling under the table eating table scraps, and nobody could convince him that he wasn't a rooster. Right? He was crazy. So finally, a chacham came to the... Well, I don't know if there was a turkey at the time. You may have heard the story from me. I said turkey. I used to, but actually, it's
America.
Yeah,
turkey.
Yeah. We just had Thanksgiving. Okay. So a chacham shows up, and a chacham says, "I will cure this sick young man." And the thing the chacham does is he takes off his clothes, like the prince, and he crawls under the table, like the prince, and he's eating scraps, like the prince. So the prince, who apparently still could talk, although he doesn't, he shouldn't be able to talk, but he says, "What are you doing here?" So the person says, "I'm a rooster, a turkey, I'm just like you, no different." He says, "Okay." So they're both crawling around together for a while. And then after a while, the chacham puts on a pair of pants. And the prince says, "What are you doing?" He says, "Who says a rooster can't wear a pair of pants?" So the prince puts on a pair of pants. And then he goes stage by stage by stage. Put on a shirt, stand up, walk upright. And every time he tells the prince, "Ain't a chinami, we're both chickens, we're both roosters, we're both turkeys. But who says turkeys can't walk and can't talk?" So at the end of the 6 months or the year, whenever it was, the prince still thought he was a rooster, but it made no difference because he was doing everything a human being did. So l'may nafkamina, meaning this is the difference people say between psychoanalysis and behavioral therapy. Psychoanalysis says we have to get into your mindset and the root of your mind. It says behavioral therapy says, who cares what you think as long as you're behaving like a mensch. And Rav Nachman in this story is on the side of behaviorism as opposed to a Freudian psychoanalysis, because he's basically saying, okay, you're a turkey, you're a chicken, you're a whatever it is, go ahead. Now, what's the meaning of the story? Again, it doesn't say what the meaning of the story is, but the simple meaning of the story is this, that often we have a certain image in our minds of who we are and what we are, and we become paralyzed by the imagery in our minds that doesn't permit us to move beyond our image. Now, that image might be formed in a million different ways. That image might be formed by our parents, by some negative impact of teachers, friends, by maybe mistakes or failures that we've made. And we have a certain image. I am a person who cannot sit, through a morning seder. Or I am a person who cannot go to minyan every morning. Or I am a person who cannot, say good Shabbos to a stranger or whatever it is. That's just the way I am. So to directly say, change your image, is a little difficult, because that's kind of a video that we replay in our minds over and over again. But Rav Nachman says, sometimes, instead of saying I'm going to change my image of myself, just go ahead and do the things you're supposed to do. And then the image corrects itself. This is really the Sefer HaChinuch, Adam Nifl Kfi Pulosav. A person is influenced by what they do. Instead of saying, my actions are the product of my emotion, say the other way around. My emotions are the product of the behaviors that I integrate. Now, Chabad, the Baal HaTanya, made a related point. He made the point that the mind can control the emotion. That's a little different. That instead of saying my emotions are like this hefker thing that's within me, one can mentally control them. Rav Nachman is making a bit of a different point. Sometimes you won't have the strength to be able to do that, but you always have the capacity for action. So basically, this is really teaching the idea, a very simple idea, of the self-fulfilling prophecy. If you think you're a rooster or a chicken or a turkey, then you're going to behave like one, and therefore you have to go the other way around, and then your actions eventually change it. Right, so that's the idea. And then he says, continuing the Vilna Gaon, the next pasuk says, "Ki soimar hein lo yadanu ze." And if you say to yourself, well, again, we'll learn both ways. The simple pshat is that sometimes I may turn a deaf ear to the plight of others because I may say to people, "I didn't know there was a problem." So Shlomo HaMelech makes the obvious point. Yeah, okay. Maybe you could fool some people out there, but you're not going to fool HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who knows exactly what you knew. Meaning, ki saymar, when you say regarding the people that are suffering, hein lo yadanu ze, I didn't know, how can you blame me? But the answer is, halo tochein libos, he who measures the hearts, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, hu yavin, he will understand. V'notzer nafshecha hu yeda, and the one that has guarded your life or created your life, he will know. V'heishiv li'adam kipa'alo, and he will return. He will give a person according to his just deserts. Now the Vilna Gaon says the same thing is true for the Yetzirah. We make excuses, and we might fool others. And we might even fool ourselves, although in the recesses of our soul, I think we know we're not really fooling ourselves. But we cannot fool HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, he knows what we're capable of. And we will be held accountable for not achieving what we were capable of achieving. Okay, so in these three psukim, we really have two messages. One is the need to be compassionate and open and responsible for the sufferings of others. And the other message is to be vigilant in the fight against our own Yetzer Hara and not to assume that we're not capable of waging that war, that sometimes the struggles appear to be beyond us, but in reality that is not the case. And lehepach, if you mentally have this version of yourself as being ineffectual, that is what you become. You become exactly what it is that you think you are. This is brought out, the Kutzker Rebbe has a famous vort, when the Meraglim report back from their encounter with the Kananim, the Amorim, right, the giants in Eretz Yisrael. So they said, V'niya be'ineinu kechagavim. We were in our eyes like grasshoppers. V'chein hayinu be'ineihem. So we were in their eyes. So the Kutzker Rebbe says the order is very clear. If your own self-image of yourself is you're an insignificant grasshopper, that is how you will appear to others. But everything starts with your own perception. A person has to be makir, their chashivas, not in a gaivadika way, but in the sense that Hashem will give them the kalach to fight against the Yetzer Hara. Yeah.
2 points. One is when you spoke about kas, because kas sort of kill out other people, but you also kill yourself, because when a person's kas, he doesn't have this chachma bina v'das. The kas clouds him. He's right. Not really a human being. He can smash kalim. He can do a bodhazor. So he's really killed.
Yeah.
He's killing himself. The kas dominates him.
Right.
And then he kills himself out.
Yeah.
Not just others. The other thing is, since Hashem is mole rachamim, sometimes it happens that someone is in a family and the child that was put down so much. So Hashem understands it's an onus rachmana patre. The person may not even know how to get himself in kovish matrias and basis. Only if he learns Mishlei with the Vilna Gaon, or he does chasidus, or he does musar, can he pull himself out. He's like trapped. So many years of being put down by his parents and his brothers and sisters. So Hashem is understanding. Of course, there's free will, but he has to open up that little eye of the needle to make himself free from that. And that requires speaking to a good Talmud Chacham, a mentor, someone who can help him out.
Yes, so
Hashem is Rachami, Mali Rachami.
Yeah, well, Rav Dessler has, I'm not sure the Golden would agree per se with that, but Rav Dessler has a very, very useful and important point about free will. He says, everybody has free will, but the free will exists at a different point in the spectrum, or the pendulum at any time. So, for example, the drug addict that is shakua in heroin addiction, let us say, does not necessarily have the free will at that moment to go to yeshiva and a kollel and become a tzaddik. So Hashem is not going to...
Let's stay off from drugs.
Yeah, so Hashem is not going to punish him at that moment because he's not in yeshiva. In other words, he has a different... This is what Rav Dester calls the nekudas habachir. He says, in every life, there are things that are so clear to us that for sure we're not going to sin. In other words, let's take a person who's already from. Right? A person who's already from. He's not really making choices not to violate Shabbos or not to eat chaser, because those are already in the bag, so to speak. Meaning, he's already decided those things. And every person has things that are beyond their madrega, meaning things in which I'm so far below that that I'm not yet ready to make that choice. So there's always going to be the point where you could go either way. And it's that point at which Hashem will hold us accountable if we don't make the right choice. And if we do make the right choice, that'll be our greatest reward. That is called the Nekudas HaBechira. There is a point, a fulcrum point of Bechira, a tipping point of Bechira that changes as you grow in your life in positive or negative ways. So the drug addict or the abused child is not going to be expected at any given point of time, why aren't you a tzaddik? There is a time that I had this experience and that experience, and Hashem, you know, sorts it out. But there will always be some nekuda, something that he could have done then to make himself better. There is that tipping point. And the tipping point will change, right? So initially, for someone that's just beginning, there may be a very big tipping point, not to smoke on Shabbos. And the Eibishter will give a person tremendous reward for making a decision not to take a cigarette on Shabbos. Later, the tipping point will be different. Did you daven with kavana? Did you, you know, whatever it would be, meaning it'll be a higher and higher, higher, higher level. That's the idea of the Nekudas HaBechira. Now, with Kas, it is very true. The Gemara says in the Nedarim that when a person has Kas, his chachma leaves him. His chachma leaves him. Literally, his wisdom leaves him. This is also a matter of common sense. When a person is bekas, he can't, obviously he does not think clearly.
He's angry?
He's angry, yeah. And then the Gemara also says, anyone that is angry is as if they worship idols. Kilo avid avadazara. And here we have, again, the famous explanation of the Balatanya. The Balatanya says that when a person is angry, then by definition, he does not believe that everything that happens in his life comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because if everything that happens in my life comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how can I be angry? This is the decree of God. And again, this is the old problem. This is not like the Arachayim, by the way, that even if somebody hurt me, and that person had Bechira not to hurt me, and that person shouldn't have hurt me, and it was wrong for that person to hurt me, and that person will be punished for his Bechira. But the Baal HaTanya writes, it wouldn't be possible for him to hurt me unless it was Hashem's decree at that moment. So if he would decide not to do it, something else would happen. Again, this is not like the Orchaim. In other words, the Baal HaTanya follows the Chayvas HaLevavos and other Rishonim that basically say nothing happens to a person that is not a direct decree of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is like a shadchan. He will enlist the free choices of bad people to be the vehicles for what comes upon you, which is kind of, this creates kind of an amazing type of fatalism in a way, because it means that even the biggest, most evil Russia in the world, who will certainly, again, this does not let the Russia off the hook, who will certainly be held to account, but he would be powerless to do anything to me unless it was Hashem's will, that it happened to me at that particular time. And therefore the Baal HaTanya says, if you're angry at what somebody did to you, you are actually an Oved Avodah Zarah, because you are ascribing autonomous power to something or someone other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that is defined as Avodah Zarah. And of course, Kas generally comes from the attitude, I'm not getting what's coming to me, meaning I want more. So essentially, it's a form of self-idolization, in which it's a gaiva. So gaiva and kas are very much connected, because kas is the frustration of not getting what I think is rightfully mine. Remember, I mentioned a number of times, again, tonight, for some reason, tonight, there's a lot of chassidus I'm bringing in, but a famous word from the Svas Emes. Why are Jews called Yehudim? So the Svas Emes says, Yehuda is the fourth son of Leah, right? And she said, Hapam Odes Hashem. Now I am grateful to the Almighty. Hoda'ah, gratitude. So Rashi brings a medrash. Why is Leah grateful for the fourth son? So Rashi says she knows there are four wives, or four women, four mothers, four imahos there, and she knows there'll be 12 shvatim. So she figures each wife of Yaakov will get three children. So you're not grateful if you get what you think is coming to you. But when she has number four, that's called Natalti Yeser al Chelki. I have gotten more than I deserve. That is when you have gratitude. So says the Svas Emes, every Jew must go through life with the attitude that Hashem has given me more than my chelik, more than I deserve. So the very definition of Jew is gratitude, the thankful people. You know, they have, this was a bit of a controversy a few years ago. In some of the dictionaries, the big dictionaries, the American Heritage Dictionary, so they also have, for words, they also have slang usages, non-standard usages. So if you look up Jew, so it'll say Jew, member of the Jewish religion, etc. Then they have a southern slang term in which Jew is a verb that means to cheat somebody in business. So I don't know if any of you are from the south, but I don't even know how common it is today, but southerners used to say, don't Jew me. You know.
It means to be drive a hard bargain.
Drive a hard bargain.
Don't Jew me down. Yeah. Don't Jew me down.
Don't Jew me down. Right. So there was So there was a big protest, etc. Okay, whatever. I don't know if they took it out or not. I have not checked. But really, the translation of Jew is the grateful one, the thankful one. That is the essence of Yiddishkeit, to be grateful to our Kaddish Baruch Hu. And that's the opposite of kas, because when there's that type of gratitude, there will not be anger, because a person never feels, I'm not getting what's coming to me, because whatever I have is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants me to have. And therefore I am happy and I'm joyous in what Hashem has given me. But again, these are high madregas. I mean, obviously these are high madregas, but this is the aspiration. This is what a Jew strives for. Okay. So now, after the way the Vilna Gaon learned, we condemn anger in terms of wanting things that you don't have. We now talk about looking at the good things that you do have. And it says, Pasuk Yud Gimel, Echol b'ni devash ki tov v'nofes masuk al chikecha. Eat, my son, honey, because honey is so good. And nofes is also very sweet from the honeycomb itself. And it'll be matok, it'll be so matok, al chikecha. Now, the Vilna Gaon has an interesting notarika, which is a little unusual, but he does it sometimes. He says, Devash can actually be an acronym for Deya, Bina, V'Seichel. Devash, Deya, Bina, Seichel, Torah knowledge, understanding, and depth, you know, different ways of perceiving the Torah. And the next pasuk, in fact, makes that explicit.
The Sforno quotes this pasuk on Eretz Zavat Chalav Udvash.
Okay, but does he take it literally, Devash, or does he take it in terms of Torah learning? How does he learn?
No, he appears to be explaining Devash as being bee honey,
as opposed to date honey. Right. But the Gra says the whole thing is metaphorical for the sweetness of Torah and the like. We know, of course, from other verses that Torah is compared to milk and honey, and therefore some say Eretz again, Midrashim, Eretz Savat Chalav Udvash, regardless of whether the literal meaning is date honey, as Chazal learn, or bee honey, but ultimately the Midrash says it refers to the sweetness of Torah knowledge. That is one of the makoros on Shavuos for having milchic foods and honey things as well, because Torah is milk and honey. Once again, therefore, the concept would be, what is a person looking at all the things they don't have when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the most precious gift that could possibly exist? And again, the Baal HaTanya's Masber, Al Pi Kabbalah, that when we say, Kutshu Berichu V'Yoraisa Chatu, God put himself into the Torah, because in God there is no multiplicity. So unlike a human being, where my will and my essence might be two different things, right? I have a will. So there's I and there's a will. With Hashem, it's not possible to say God has something, because God is a complete unity. Again, this is an abstract statement. And because God is a complete unity, God's will is the same as God. And since the Torah is God's will, it is a concretization of God. So if God gave us the Torah, God gave us himself. And when we learn Torah, we are directly with Hashem. We are unifying ourselves with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So there is no possible greater gift than that. And that is Dei Chachma L'Nafshecha, right? You know the phrase. This is where Dunash Ibn Labrat, who wrote Dror Yikra, Dunash Ibn Labrat was a very, very famous Jewish grammarian in around the 10th century, before Rashi. And he wrote Sfarim on Diktuk that Rashi brings. Rashi will bring Dunash. In fact, if you study the Diktuk Rashis, you will notice that when Rashi brings in a source for a grammatical point, he will bring in two sources. He will bring in Menachem, and he will bring in Dunash. Menachem Bar Chelbo was the first author of the first biblical dictionary. This is called the Machberes. It's actually a very, very important sefer. He translated the different words, the unusual words in Tanakh, and Rashi very much relied on the Machberes of Menachem. Right, so you'll see. Maybe you remember Rashi sometimes will say Menachem explained it so and so. Dunash was like the Ravid to the Rambam, was Dunash to Menachem, meaning Dunash often argues with Menachem. And Rabbeinu Tam was like a later Tosfos who tries to be Miyashiv Menachem against Dunash's attacks, etc. So it's all interesting grammatical machlokas and translation and the like. So one of the things that Dunash wrote, in addition to his books on Diktuk, is Doror Yidra Lebeinu Bas, the Shabbos Semer, and it spells out his name, Dunash. And it ends with this phrase, the last stanza, Dei Chachma L'Nafshecha, know the wisdom for your soul. Right, it's actually taken from this pasuk. V'yesh acharit, there will be something that will last. It will be forever. V'sikvascha lo sikaris. Okay, and your hope will not be cut down. Now let's go on for the next three pasuk, and then I'll go back and say something on this. And that is, Al terov rasha l'nevei tzadik, al tishadei drifzo. And this next pasuk is a very famous pasuk. Ki sheva yipail tzadik v'kam, urishoyim yikashlu b'ra'a. Terov is to wait in ambush. So this pasuk is actually talking to the rasha, meaning you put a comma after terov. Do not wait in ambush, evil person, to the dwelling of the tzaddik, and do not plunder the place where he lies down. Meaning, Vilna Gaon explains that the Rasha in this pasuk also refers to the Yetzer Hara that tries to be machshil a tzaddik over and over again. In fact, the Yetzer Hara has a special interest in tzaddikim, because the people who are naturally indolent, they're easy. The Yetzer Hara looks for a challenge in the world to be machshil, the great and the righteous. So the pasuk says, "Don't do it, because the tzaddik, even if he fails, will come back again." Now, what is the double lashon? Do not wait in ambush at the dwelling place of the tzaddik, and do not plunder where he lies down. So the Gra explains very simply that the word neveh refers to a permanent dwelling, a permanent dwelling place. Rivtso is where you lie down, your temporary dwelling place. Now, what does that mean in the case of a tzaddik? So the Gra gives two interpretations. One interpretation is that the real dwelling place of a tzaddik is Olam Haba. And this world is a temporary place where he puts down his bed or puts down his mattress. And therefore, the Yetzer Hara is being told, don't be machshalim from Olam Haba or Olam Hazeh. Now, this is reminiscent of a very, very famous story with the Chofetz Chaim. First of all, Chazal themselves use this metaphor in a slightly different way. They say that Olam Hazeh is like the hallway to a palace. Right, it's a traklin, it's a praise door to a traklin. Haskein atzvecha b'praise door. Prepare yourself in the hallway, kedei shetikanes l'traklin, so you should be able to enter the palace. Now, they tell the story that when someone came to visit the Chafetz Chaim.
Actually, a woman. They changed the story.
Oh, is it a woman?
It was a woman.
Is it a woman?
She
okay.
Didn't care about furniture.
This is such a famous story.
Yeah.
Okay, indeed. Okay, so, well, a woman. So
a wealthy woman.
Okay, someone came to the Chafetz Chaim, and she or whoever the guest saw that there was no furniture in the house. The Chafetz Chaim had a dirt floor. There were just a few benches that were broken. The table was lopsided. There was like nothing there. Even by the poverty standards of Eastern Europe, the Chofetz Chaim was unusual, meaning a normal Rav, had a house, had a floor. A normal person had a floor. He had no floor. He was like living in absolute poverty. And the person said, "Where's your furniture?" And the Chofetz Chaim said, "Where's your furniture?" And the person said, "I'm just traveling here.
Passing through.
I don't live where I'm passing through." The Chofetz Chaim said, "Me too." So that is why, for the tzaddik, the neveh of a tzaddik is Olam Haba. The rivtso is lirvot, just to lie down. Where he lies down is here. Now, they said, just to give you another example of this, which is not in a somewhat of a different vein, that Rav Aryeh Levin, the great tzaddik of Yerushalayim, was Rav Yashiv's father-in-law, the great tzaddik. They were very different. I mean, Rav Yashiv was, of course, a paisek hador and a tremendous masmid. Rav Aryeh Levin was also a great Talmud Chacham, but Rav Aryeh Levin was very, very involved in going out for Gemilas Chassadim. I mean, he visited prisoners. This was pre-1948, when there were many, many Jews that the British imprisoned and for their activities for the pre-state of Israel and the like. His wife herself was a very, very great tzaddikus, a very phenomenally great, great tzaddikus, Rebbe Sanil Yashiv's mother. And in fact, they tell the story, Rav Aryeh Levin once said, somebody was trying to sell him life insurance. And he says, "I'm not going to buy life insurance. No, no, no. If I buy life insurance, I'm endangering my life." He says, "What's the pshat?" Because he says, every Rosh Hashanah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to decide if Aryeh deserves to live or Aryeh doesn't deserve to live. And I know, he said in his modesty, "I don't deserve to live. But Hashem knows my Rebbetzin needs me. So in the merit of my Rebbetzin, Hashem gives me life. So what's going to be if I buy a lot of life insurance?" So next Rosh Hashanah, once again, the Midas Adin will say, "Rav Aryeh should die." And the Midas HaRachamim will say, "His Rebbetzin needs him." The Midas Adin will say, "No, she doesn't. He has life insurance." So he says, the best life insurance is if I don't buy. But what happened was, Taka, his wife died before him. His wife died before him. And they tell the story, I mean, they just recount it, just as a little story, that once he was going to a doctor, and as he was coming back, he was in a cab, and the cab driver asked him, "Where do you live?" Meaning, "Where should I take you?" He asked, "Where do you live?" And Rav Aryeh didn't, "Where's your home? You know, where do you live?" And Rav Aryeh didn't answer. And the cab driver finally said, "Tell me where you live, where your house is." He says, "I lost my wife. I don't have a house. I don't have a home. If you want to know where I sleep at night, I'll tell you. But I don't call it a home."
That's Ishto
Beso. Yeah, Ishto Beso, exactly right. So he refused to answer any question about where he lived, where was his bias. He said there was no bias. That's what he said. Okay. All right. Now the Vilna Gaon gives another pshat, which I think is also very interesting. He says, the Neveh of a Tzaddik is the Beis HaMedrash. And the Riftso, where he lies down, is his room, his bedroom, whatever it is. Meaning to say, what is your Iker place? What is your Iker place? That it's not just Eilam Haba versus Eilam Hazeh, but for a Tzaddik, his main home is the Beis HaMedrash. That is why actually Halakha permits eating in a basement. Okay, you have to obey Yeshiva rules. I'm not going to raise that issue. But there is a big nafkamina between a Beis Knesset and a Beis HaMedrash. A Beis HaKnesset, you're Meikar, then you're not allowed to eat anything. We have Chutzlach, we have all sorts of heterim based on Tanoim, conditions that are made. But even then, it's very, very questionable. But in a Beis HaMedrash, if a person is learning, a person is allowed to eat or drink. And the reason is because the Beis Medrash is supposed to be treated as the place where you live. This is your home. This is your main place. So you have to eat. You have to, yeah, right? You can sleep as well. In fact, it was very, very common. A whole generations of good people who became Gedolim, typically, would sleep in the Beis Medrash, right? They would sleep on a bench for a few hours, and then they would go on. Of course, we have to remember, for our Madrega, we have to follow the Chafetz Chaim's advice of, you know, going to sleep. You know, the Chafetz Chaim would shut off the lights in Radin because he was concerned for people's health, so one should not go beyond that. But in terms of what is my Iker Dira, what is my place? My place is the Beis Medrash, and that is the Neveh Tzaddik. And Riftso is where you lie down. So where you lie down, that's very much tougher, yeah.
Rav Schneider told me that, because if you would require someone to the base, and base is different than the base of Knesset, that's where you're learning and everything. Every time you have to do something that is not connected to exactly the Torah, right. And one hour, one have a candy bar, you walk outside, it'll be a bit of Torah, you're going to have to go out all the time for every personal needs. Eat the candy bar, you continue learning,
Right. Actually, this was a cheshbon, I read that when Mir was, you know, the Mir base medrash, he's not on the first floor, right? You have to go up stairs, right? So the question is, no, logically, why not have a Beis Medrash right on the first floor? So they say, well, Rosen Tzvi was against it. Actually, I don't know, the main Beis Medrash was built before Rosen Tzvi, but I think in the newer buildings as well. And the reason was because if the Beis Medrash is directly open to the ground level, so, you know, every time a person wants to take a break, it's like easy. You know, I take a break for a while, it's so easy to leave the Beis Medrash. When you have to go downstairs, you know, you'll think twice. We're so lazy. The Bittul Torah doesn't bother us. It's interesting. The Bittul Torah doesn't bother us, but having to walk down the stairs, that already is, that's too much tircha, you know. Well, I guess that's good. It's good that, I guess tiber can take different forms, right? The tircha of walking down a little bit is, overrides the Taibah for whatever. Okay. Now, the next Pasuk is a very important Yisai, because the next Pasuk is basically Hashem is telling the Eitzahara, Tav Yochan, that even when you think you've won, your victories are not complete. Because the Tzaddik may fall 7 times. And this refers to even spiritual failures. But he will get up again. The difference between the tzaddik and the rasha is not that tzaddikim don't sin. Tzaddikim do sin, occasionally. Right? Great people sometimes do averus. We don't understand exactly. David, Moshe, whatever it would be. But a tzaddik does not allow the negativity of the sin to crush his spirit. He understands that if he falls spiritually, he must get up again. That's a tremendous thing. The tzaddik does not allow himself to be crushed by spiritual defeats. You know, Rav Huttner used to say that this is why he was not a fan of the genre of Gedolim biographies. Because the typical Gedolim biographies talk about only the greatness of the person. And they create supernatural descriptions that really have no relevance to us. You know, whoever the Gadol is, like somebody once said, they all sound the same biography. When he was 4 years old, you know, he knew Tanakh by heart. And when he was 5 years old, he finished Mishnah. And by 6 years old, he finished the three Bavas. And by seven, he finished Shas. And then by Bar Mitzvah, he had learned Bavli Yerushalmi and Kitzvi Harizal. And at his Bar Mitzvah, some of these stories are true. Not all of them. Some of them are in fact true. That the Chaim Ozer at his Bar Mitzvah didn't have a Dvar Torah to say. So he simply said, I'll just say over Ketzoses and Nesivoses by heart. Okay. Now, these are great stories. And, you know, we're really, really amazed at how fantastic, you know, brilliant the people were. But Rav Huttner says, you know, read them, and it really says nothing to challenge us to be a better person, because we know we don't have those kochos, we don't have those abilities. We can't be like that. And as a result, we can just, you know, pat ourselves on the back. Oh, well, that's a great story, but you know, what does that have to do with me? But Rav Huttner says, you have to understand that great Gedolim, many of them, not all, had sometimes very, very great challenges in their lives. We know the Chafetz Chaim, when he was 70, 80, 90, how he trained himself to fall asleep, you know, if he heard Lashon Hara. But what did the Chafetz Chaim go through at 15 or at 17? How did he become that way? You're not always born with all of these abilities. Especially in the spiritual, maybe you're born with a mind, that might be so. Some people are born with a brilliant mind. But character is something one has to work on. Rav Moshe himself said that he was naturally someone with a very bad temper. And I'm not sure, I don't know how true it was, but he says he worked on himself. And Rav Moshe, as we know, was the absolute opposite was the gentlest, kindest of people. But Rav Moshe, this was not natural for him. This was something that he worked on. So Rav Huttner said, when you have to work on something, there's going to be failures, there are going to be setbacks, there are going to be times in which you have not succeeded. Maybe one step back, one step forward, two steps back, or hopefully two steps forward, one step back, etc. So Rav Huttner said, it would be much more instructive to have a record of the struggles of our great Gedolim, to see that they didn't allow it to destroy them and they went forward, as opposed to just reading about unbroken successes. Now, you may say there's a problem with Lashon Hara, there might be a problem with Lashon Hara. On the other hand, let me just point out that this is the Derech HaTorah itself. The Derech HaTorah itself is that the Torah talks, now of course we have to interpret, we have to understand, the Torah itself talks about the failures of great people. Now, we have to understand that the failures of great people are not the same as our failures. It is a failure according to their madrega. But even a statement in Chazal that anyone that says David sinned is making a mistake, that doesn't mean David didn't sin. How can you say David didn't sin? The Pasuk says David sinned. It just means anyone that interprets David's sin as literal as you might think it is making a mistake. The sin was a higher level sin. But Avadit was a sin. The Torah is not whitewashed. Like some people say, you know, all of the arguments of the proof of Torah min HaShemayim. So one of the cutest proofs is, the proof of Torah min HaShemayim is that if we were writing our own history, we certainly wouldn't tell it that way. The history has so many negative things about the Jewish people that only God would have written. I mean, what nation is going to write its history with Yaakov and Esav, and Yaakov stealing the brachas from Esav, and Mechiras Yosef? You know, the Quran doesn't say that negative stuff about Muhammad, you know. And same thing with the Christian Bible as well. We're the only ones. The Abish are not, you know, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a God of truth. And number two, the Torah is about a guide to life. And in a guide to life, you have to understand that there are going to be failures. But the tzaddik does not get crushed by defeat. That's the greatest thing. He doesn't get crushed by physical obstacles. And in the context here, he does not get crushed by spiritual obstacles. He keeps on going. You know, I'll bring another pasuk that I think makes the point also in a very good way. There's a pasuk from the Navi Hosea that we read on Shabbos Shuva. It's also the Haftarah for Vayetzeh. Ki Yisharim Darchei Hashem. The ways of Hashem are Yashor. They're straight. They will take you to the straight way. Tzadikim Yelchubam. The righteous walk in those paths. But then it says, Uposhim, the sinners, Yikoshlubam, stumble in those paths. So the pasuk doesn't seem complicated, but in reality, the pasuk actually literally does not make perfect sense. Because if you perceive of serving God as a road that you walk, if that's a mental picture, the problem with the sinner is not that he stumbles on the road. The problem with the sinner is he takes a different road. He takes the road away from Hashem. But the implication of the pasuk is that the Poshea and the Tzaddik are both walking on Darchei Hashem. But how could that be? He's a Poshea. So one might suggest the following, although it's a little atypical, that the word Poshea or Poshim in that pasuk may not refer to sinners like Pesha, but it may refer to Peshia, negligence, meaning carelessness, inadvertence, not paying attention. Meaning the pasuk is not contrasting a righteous person with an evil person. The Torah is contrasting a righteous person with a person who doesn't really think about life as conscientiously as he should. And both of them are starting off with good intentions. Both are walking in the way of God. Both are walking on that road. But in walking on that road, you'll encounter obstacles. You'll encounter people that will try to discourage you. You'll encounter setbacks. How do you respond to the setbacks? The negligent person, when he trips, feels there's no use going on anymore. The tzaddik keeps on going. And that's the Sheva Yipo Tzaddik Vekam. And again, it goes back to the what we talked about in the beginning. If you think you're not capable of this fight, then you lose your power to engage in this fight. So the Sheva Yipo Tzaddik Vekam is the secret of the tzaddik, and that is resilience, not giving up. The Vilna Gaon says, Mipi HaShmua, that if you're davening Shmona Esrei, and the Yetzer Hara got you in Atachonen, right? Your mind was wandering, so you get him back in Hashiveinu Avinu. In other words, there's no such thing. I mean, all of us have this attitude sometimes, you know. The Shmona Esrei, okay. I already messed it up, so I'll just wait for the next feel. They said, no. Line by line, word for word, whatever you can salvage. Same thing with the Seder. People say, you know, all right, 2.5 hours waste. I'll just call it a day. No. You know, you have an hour. Make it a good hour. The schar you get for Talmud Torah is unbelievable. If you have 5 minutes, make it a good 5 minutes. Right, the tzaddik does not allow himself to get discouraged even when there are failures. Now, this was the big controversy. I don't want to talk about it a lot. Rav Nachum Kamenetsky, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky's son, oldest son, who still lives in Eretz Yisrael here, wrote a biography of his father, Making of a Gadol. And this biography, very, very complicated, the biography, because it had I never saw a book that had like 5 layers of footnotes. There was footnotes and then footnotes to the footnotes and footnotes to the footnotes. He could have used an editor on it. But this was an absolutely phenomenally interesting book, because it was not just about Rav Yaakov, it was about the whole culture of the yeshiva world at the beginning of the century, and vignettes about Rav Aaron, all the Gedolim who grew up, Rav Huttner, who grew up during that time. And one of the points the book made was all of the nisyonos that these great people faced in terms of secular education, in terms of being interested in literature. You know, Rav Aaron, for example, was interested in Tolstoy and Dostoevsky, which of course he read in the original Russian. That was his, one of his native languages. And he was pointing out that the Haskalah was so rampant that they were literally on the lookout, almost kidnapping, like bright, brilliant kids, to kind of secularize them and take them away from the world of Torah. And they talked about the fact that sometimes there were tikufos in which people wandered off and then they came back again, sometimes not. So this book was banned in Eretz Yisrael. This book was put in excommunication, and Rav Nosson had to withdraw it from the market. It's interesting that...
Because his children would not have shidduch.
Yeah, well...
He wasn't afraid, but
yeah,
his kids would not have shidduch.
Yeah, because and they basically made the argument, how can you, you know, we're not going to allow you to say negative things about Gedolim. But his argument was, this is not negative. If you talk about somebody who struggled and how they came back for struggle, that is a reason to admire them. That's a reason to be mocked of them. That is a reason to, that shows that they're greater than you thought. And that's also something from which we can derive much, much chizuk and inspiration. Halachically, it is a bit of a question. It's not you know, it's not so pashut. But still, the point is a very, very interesting point. So he came out with a second edition, which modified some things, but they put that in Cherem too. So, but just to show you how things go, the book was on sale for $25 when it was being sold. So now it's not available anymore. Although I think you can go from Rav Nosson, he'll give it to you privately. But somebody is trying to make a killing on eBay. You can get it for $1,000. Some guy has the book. I remember now, you know, sometimes with the smart, I've discovered, you know, when you see a safer that you like, get it right away, because you never know what's going to happen. A lot of times already. I saw something on Monday. By Tuesday, it wasn't there anymore. And, you know, and it'll never be seen again, you know, so you have to be careful. Mitzvah Bali Yadchav Tach Mitzana also applies to the smart.
Who were the they that put in the harem?
Again, there were Kanoim who went to Rebel Yashiv. I don't want to say it should be exact. Rebel Yashiv signed off that it's not proper to distribute the book. He didn't use the word Chayim, and he did not use any Lashon at all of Kfira. He just said he thought that it's better not to circulate such a book. But obviously, when Rebel Yashiv signed something like that, the way it is then described is they used words about Bikurzis, but it was never, he never used
that.
He never used the Lashon like that.
I heard from someone very clearly that people had actually lied to Rebel Yashiv.
Yeah.
Because he said, if you correct and do this and this, it'll be okay.
Right.
And then they quoted the Rav Nosson comments, I'm not going to do that, as if he's a chutzpah against Rebel Yashiv. So they lied to Rebel Yashiv, then did the ban that he did, or the mini ban.
Yeah.
Because there was deception set.
Yeah, it was again, Rav Nosson is a big time guy. I shouldn't even call it a ban. Rav Yashiv did not ban it. He said it was lo nachon, these types of things, and then of course it gets interpreted like a ban and everything else. Okay, it's very different than the Rabbi Slifkin issue, which is another issue that involves some ideas at least that might be against Mesorah. Okay, now the next pasuk is also a very, very famous pasuk that Chazal used in a number of midrashim. That is, "V'nafol oyevcha al tismach." When your enemy has his downfall, do not rejoice in the downfall of your enemy. Ubikachlo, when he stumbles, al yogel libecha, do not have glee in your heart. Pen yira Hashem, lest Hashem sees the gleefulness that you have. Verabi enav, and it will be evil in Hashem's eyes. Veheshiv me'alav hapo, and he will take his anger away from him, and by extension, put it on you. Now, Chazal used this pasuk, of course, to explain, like the Malachi Ashares at the time of Kriyas Yamsuf wanted to sing a song of praise to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, do not sing praises to me. Maisa Yodai Tavu Bayam, my creatures, the Egyptians, are drowning in the sea. V'atem Omrim Shira, and you want to praise me when the Egyptians are dying? Can't do that. In fol oyevecha al tismach. Now it's interesting. Let me just point out that there actually is a very fascinating machlekes, the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, how to understand Rav Yochanan's teaching. Because here's the thing. Rav Yochanan starts off interpreting a pasuk in the Kriyas Yamsuf, where it says, V'loi karav ze el ze kol halayla. And the simple meaning is that because there was a thick cloud preventing the Egyptians from entering as the Jews were crossing, right? That's why the Egyptians couldn't enter the sea channel till all the Jews finished crossing. So the thick cloud prevented the Jews and the Egyptians from connecting. Like karav ze el ze kol halayla. But the Medrash, Rav Yochanan says, it actually refers to the angels, because the angels are described as talking to each other, v'kara ze'el ze'a, so lo kara ze'el ze'a, meaning they could not say Shira. And the reason is, Rav Yochanan said, they couldn't say Shira all night, because ma'ase yadai tavu bayam v'atem aimrim Shira. So according to the Bavli in Maseches Megillah, the Maisei Yodai is a reference to the Egyptians. Since the Egyptians are drowning, don't say Shira. But the Yerushalmi says very different. The Yerushalmi actually says Maisei Yodai refers to the Jews. And this refers to the fact that the sea itself wanted to close upon the Jews by saying Ma Nishtanu Eilu Mi'Eilu. Why are the Jews better than the Egyptians? So Hashem is basically saying they're not out of the water yet. It's a totally different interpretation. According to the Yerushalmi, Maisa Yadai Tavu Bayam is not Hashem's commiseration for the suffering of the Egyptians. It is Hashem simply saying, don't say Shira till the Jewish people have been saved. Because right now there is a kitrug, there's an accusation against them which has not yet been fully resolved. Mamash opposite. And that is why the relevance of Binafol Oyevecha al Tismach is only according to the Bavli's understanding of Rav Yochanan. And that's why the Bavli brings it. It is not relevant to the Yerushalmi's understanding. And the Yerushalmi actually answers a whole bunch of kashas, because everybody asks the kasha, if you're not supposed to rejoice when your enemy is destroyed, then why did the Jewish people say Uz Yashir? Like the Yerushalmi, that's not a kasha, because the problem was only it was premature. Okay, well, it's still a kasha from the pasuk. It's not a kasha from Rabbi Yochanan, but Lamaisa, you have this issue of Nefala Yivachal Tisla. Yeah.
My friend Zechazan Rabbi Yitzchok Donsky Kohen said you can answer that they can say Shira Am Yisrael, but the Malachim not, because we see the case when the Yerushalayim was surrounded, when the heavens were open and the Malachim sang, then everyone died. So Ma'aseh Yodai Tavu B'Yom Atem Amrim Shira. You're going to say Shira now. They'll hear the Shira and they'll die. They're supposed to die. Mida Kenegi Mida. They're supposed to drown.
Right. Yeah, that's the
Talmud.
Right. They need to die by
drowning. The same as they drowned the Jewish boys.
Yeah. Now, Mefarshim asked the Kasha. There is another pasuk in Mishlei itself that says, "Be'ibud Rishayim Rina." The destruction of the wicked, Rina, there is joyous singing. So in Mishlei you often have contradictions of this, right? I read this pasuk, do not rejoice upon the downfall of your enemy. Then we have another pasuk that says, when Rishus is destroyed in the world, when Rishayim are destroyed in the world, there is joy. But the answer basically is, it all depends on what's going on. Certainly, I am joyous and happy when there is less evil in the world. That's a Kiddush Hashem. Hashem's kingdom is more established. There's more godliness visible in the world, manifest in the world. But I am not happy that this Russia died. I would have been happier if the Russia would have done Shuva. Because you have to understand that the evil that Rishayim do is not only a tragedy for the victims of the Rishus. It is a tragedy for the Russia, who was also made in God's image, and was a child of Hashem. And Hashem lost, Hashem had to kiss. It's as if, Kav Yochel, a parent had to kill one of his children because that child would otherwise kill everybody else. Hashem does what he has to do. But the Eibishter does not have simcha. We can't have simcha as well. So there's a simcha that there's less evil in the world. That is a simcha. But there's a pain that Hashem, as it were, had to destroy a neshama that potentially, because of bechira, potentially could have been good. Every person could have been a tzaddik. Yeah.
There's a difference between your enemy and a Russia.
Yeah.
A person who is your enemy may only be your enemy as a result of a misunderstanding.
Yeah, that's also a good point. Although again, that is a good pshat. That is actually a very, very valid point. Because this pasuk does not even use the word Russia. This pasuk says your enemy. Your enemy could be you have some personal issue that has not been resolved.
Right.
The only reason I'm not totally satisfied with that is because Chazal do use this pasuk about the Egyptians as well. But al pi pshat, what you're saying is very, very good, and it's very, very true. Far too often, the animosities that exist between people is simply because, you know, we didn't take the time or the effort to understand. In fact, that's why they connect shalom and shalem. Shalem is complete, and shalom is peace. When you know the complete story, there will tend to be peace between people, and that is very true.
There's a book that came out from long ago. Words that are very similar, but that he shows the difference between the
right.
Two. And maybe in that book, but maybe the word Shira and Rina, he'll show there's a difference between them, where the
yeah.
Shira is more expressive of the gusto,
right.
And Rina is, maybe you're just happy that these guys aren't going to kill you, so
right.
You're allowed to do a Rina, but you can't do a Shira.
Right, okay, that's
there's a
check.
Between the two.
Yeah.
Maybe the Golden brings that
well, I'm sure one way or the other he does. That would be a synonym. In fact, you know, there's a famous story, just apropos of nothing, but it reminds me of a story. it's really a maskil, a non-religious maskil, had a great, great desire to visit the Vilna Gaon, because he had heard the Vilna Gaon was so brilliant and so much of a genius. He wanted to meet the Vilna Gaon. But he was not from, so he really couldn't just go. So he dressed himself up as an Italian rabbi, because Italians were a little more modern. They didn't have beards. And he forged a bunch of letters from the different Italian rabbis, and he came with 150 grammatical Tanakh questions to ask the Vilna Gaon. So he got himself an appointment, however he did it, and he shows up, and the Vilna Gaon somehow saw that there was no real Kedusha here, so he refused to let the person come into his room. The Vilna Gaon stood in the hallway and said, "You can ask me your questions here." So the person asked question one. The Vilna Gaon and waited for an answer. The Vilna Gaon said, "Just say all your questions." So the person read 150 questions to the Vilna Gaon. So the Vilna Gaon said, after he heard 150 questions, he just like closed his eyes and he's listening. The Vilna Gaon says, "Okay, question one and question 75. Are fundamentally based on the same assumptions. This is how we'd answer them. Question 2 and question 15, you know, just it was unbelievable. He remembered 150 questions. He was able to group them and give answers. So the person is like amazed. Every single question is like answered, you know, amazingly. And when he's about to leave, the Vilna Gaon says, "I see you're a grammarian. Can you tell me the difference? Chazal say there are 10 lashonos of shir in the Torah. Rina, etc. Can you tell me the difference in all of them?" So the person explained 9 of them. So the Vilna Gaon said, "You didn't explain ditsa. What's the meaning of ditsa?" So the person said, "Well, the grammarians say ditsa means dancing. It does not mean singing." The Vilna Gaon says, "What do you mean the grammarians? Chazal say ditsa is a lashon of shira." The person said, "Yeah, but the Balei Dikduk say differently." All right. So the Vilna Gaon just turned around and went back into his room. So the guy goes back to his lodging, and like a half an hour later, there's a knock in the door, and some big burly shamashim of the Gila of Vilna are there, and they say, "Are you the person who just saw the Gaon?" He says, "Yeah, I am." He says, "Well, the Gaon ordered us to punish you because you were malig al divrei chachamim. You made fun of the words of the chachamim. And Vilna was a kehila, so they had legal authority to punish people. And there was like a stockade. They would put your hands and feet in stocks, and you'd wear a sign that said, Malik, I am a person who has made fun of the words of the Chachamim. And people would walk by and throw food at you or insulting you, whatever. This was an Onesh. And he says, he writes this in a letter, this Maskil later, and he says that he was in the stockade for like 2 hours. And then they tarred and feathered him. They covered him with tar and feathers, and they carried him out, and they dumped him on the ground. And he says he was totally humiliated. But then he writes at the end, but you know, I would do it again for the opportunity. There are asara l'shainis of Shira. Now, you know, here's one thing I want to clarify, because a lot of people... I've heard part of this, but they haven't heard the whole thing. Yeah.
There really were punishments, like.
Yep.
Okay,
but I mean, is that from Chazal?
No, not from Chazal. No. But what happened was that in the medieval period, Jewish kehilos were given legal authority, and therefore, in terms of Haras Shah, they are allowed to impose these punishments. In fact, there were, for example, imprisonment is not a punishment in the Torah.
Right.
But the kehilos did have little jails for people as well. It's called Haras Shah, and they have the right to do these things. Now, the story goes like this. We know on Pesach, we don't recite, we only recite a complete Hallel on the first day of Pesach. Yitzias Mitzrayim, and in Chutz La'aretz, the first 2 days of Pesach. All the other days of Pesach, we only recite a half Hallel. Now, here's the thing that people don't realize. The Gemara itself in Erechin asks the Kasha. The Gemara in Erechin asks the Kasha directly, how come for Sukkos we recite a full Hallel all 8 days, including Shmini Atzeres, and on Pesach we only recite a full Hallel the first day? The Gemara asks the Kasha. And the Gemara's answer is a technical answer. The Gemara's answer is that on Pesach, every day of Pesach you bring the identical Korban Musaf. Since you bring the identical Korban Musaf, it is really one holiday. So you say a full hallel only once in the holiday. Since Sukkot, every single Musaf is different, we look at every single day of Sukkot, including Chol HaMoed, as a distinct Yom Tov. That's Mechayev, a complete Hallel. That is what the Gemara says. Now, that's not the reason that everybody knows. Now, the reason that everybody knows is it's actually not found in the Medrash. You see, but it's called a Medrash Harnina, which is a lost Medrash that the Shibali Leket quotes. And that is, since the seventh day of Pesach commemorates the death of the Egyptians in Maisa Yadai Tavu Bayom, so just like the Malachi Hashares don't say Shira, we don't say a complete Hallel. Now, again, be sure you understand the difference between Rav Yochanan and the Medrash. Rav Yochanan did say the Malachim didn't say Shira. That's in the Gemara. But he did not give that as the reason for why we don't say Hallel. Okay, be sure. That's a jump. That's a further jump that only appears in the Shibalei Leket based on the Medrash Harnina. See, people make a mistake. A lot of people instinctively think that Rav Yochanan in the Gemara was explaining why we don't say a whole Hallel on the last day of Pesach. Not true. Rav Yochanan is not explaining anything about Hallel. He's just explaining Malachi Hasharet. But the Medrash that the Shibalei Leket quotes applies it to Hallel. Now, there are a lot of kashas on the Shibalei Leket. Wait a second here. Question number one is, the Taz asks, okay, that happened on the seventh day of Pesach. But what about Chol HaMoed? We ought to say a whole Hallel. So the Taz answers, we never want to make Chol HaMoed better than Yom Tov. So if we're not going to say it on Yom Tov, then we go backwards, we're not going to say it Chol HaMoed. But the other kasha is, on the first day of Pesach, we say a whole Hallel, even though that was Makas Bechoros. The Egyptian firstborn died. Why aren't we concerned then? Right? And what about us Yashir? So Rav Chaim Soloveitchik gives a beautiful, beautiful answer to these kashas. He says the following. This is a very, very ingenious idea. Let's first look at us Yashir. If the malachim cannot praise the angels, praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how could Bnei Yisrael do it? So Rav Chaim says, there is a difference between the person who is actually saved and the observer from a distance. When you are actually saved, you express your joy not because you're rejoicing in the destruction of the evildoers. You're expressing your joy because Hashem saved me. It's a getter of Hakara Satov. So Hashem says to the Malachim, you don't praise me for the death of the Egyptians. But the Jewish people that were actually saved, they have to praise Hashem. So based on this idea, Rav Chaim says the following. On the first day of Pesach, including the night, Chayav Adam Liros Asatzma, we have to experience as if we ourselves are personally redeemed. If you are personally redeemed, you thank Hashem even if other people died. But he wants to be Mechadesh. On the seventh day of Pesach, we no longer have the chiyuv to feel. In other words, we on the seventh day of Pesach are like the malachim. On the first day of Pesach, we're like the Jewish people at Kriyas Yamsuf. Meaning, when it's a personal thing, you thank Hashem. When it's a commemorative thing, then you say, Maisa Yadai Tovu B'Yam. This is what Rav Chaim Soloveitchik says. Again, a very, very brilliant answer. This is assuming, of course, that the Chayav Adam Liros Asatzmo Kilu Yasim Mitzrayim does not apply to Shvi Shel Pesach. Okay, that's a plausible assumption. Now let me leave you with one final thought. We know that originally Shemona Esrei had 18 blessings, right? That's why it's called Shemona Esrei. And when was the 19th blessing added? The 19th blessing was added after the Chorban Bayis Sheni in Yavne. And there were many, many groups that were trying to undermine the Jewish people. Some say it was early Christianity. Whatever it was, various missionary groups that tried to destroy us spiritually. These were called Minim, sectarians. And Rabbi Gamliel said, Mi yisakein lanu birkas aminim. Who can write a bracha against the heretics? And Rabbi Gamliel is looking and looking and looking for an appropriate author to write the bracha against the heretics, till he finally identifies a very great Tana, Shmuel HaKatan, Shmuel the Humble. And Shmuel HaKatan is the author of Birkas Haminim, which is Lamal Shinim Al Tihi Sifa. So Rav Kook writes in his Siddur, Rav Kook writes, what is Rabbi Gamliel's big difficulty? Who will write Birkas Haminim? Well, who wrote? Okay, I mean, so get somebody to write it. What is the unique difficulty of writing the Birkas Haminim, and why was Shmuel HaKatan the only person who could do the job? So Rav Kook says the following idea, very, very beautiful idea, which again is totally congruent with Rav Kook's own derech in Avodas Hashem. That is, when Malshinim is very unique in the Amidah, because every bracha in the Amidah asks Hashem for blessing. Bless us, give us refuah, give us geula, give us parnasa, give us Yeshua. The only bracha in Shemona Esrei that asks Hashem to curse, destroy, obliterate, punish, is the bracha of l'malshinim. Now here is the problem. When a person, again, the Jewish people have so many enemies. They have enemies who try to destroy us physically and spiritually in every possible way. But Rav Kook writes, when you pray to Hashem for the obliteration of evil, you cannot pray out of anger, out of hatred, out of resentment. You can't pray out of a sense of wanting the other person to suffer. You pray only that Hashem will give you the environment that allows you to continue to serve Hashem properly. So when Rabbi Gamliel says, who can write such a bracha? He's basically saying, we suffered a Chorban Beis Hamikdash, we suffered a Bar Kokhba revolt, where perhaps millions of Jews were killed. The numbers are that Chazal give you are absolutely astronomical, although the Maral says perhaps they're a guzma. Who can possibly, in the aftermath of Hitler or whatever it is, who can possibly write a bracha calling for Hashem to punish without being filled with anger and hatred? But when you're filled with anger and hatred, Hashem doesn't accept your bracha, because you're not praying for the glory of God, you're praying out of your own vengeance and hatred and anger and bitterness. So Shmuel HaKatan was the one person who didn't have this issue. Why? We know very little about Shmuel HaKatan. He's not quoted a lot, although Chazal called him someone that was worthy of Hashras HaShechina Kamosha Ramenu, if the generation would have been deserving. The Gemara says he was once at an asifa for Kiddush HaChodesh. And a bas kol said, there was someone in this room who is as worthy as Moshe Rabbeinu of having the Shekhinah rest on him. And it is said that every person in the room, except Shmuel HaKatan, looked at Shmuel HaKatan. They all knew that he was the one. That's an amazing thing. But it's amazing, you know, it's really amazing that sometimes the Tanoim that are identified as the greatest exceptional tzaddikim, we have very, very few teachings from them. Yonasan ben Uziel was the greatest of Hillel's Talmidim. We have no teacher, we have the Targum, of course, but we have no teachings, halacha, from Yonasan ben Uziel. Yochanan ben Zakkai was the youngest of the Talmidim, and he was the one that gave so much Torah. So anyway, Pirkei Avos does quote one thing in the name of Shmuel HaKatan, and it says, Shmuel HaKatan Haya Omer. And what's interesting is, what it quotes in the name of Shmuel HaKatan is not his at all. He's simply quoting this pasuk, meaning he would quote this pasuk all the time. Binfol Ayivecha Al Tisvach. Do not take personal glee in the downfall of your enemy. Apparently, Haya Omer meant this pasuk was always on his lips. Rabbi Gamliel says, he is the only person who can write the Birkas Aminu, because he would not be praying for the destruction of evil because he wants them to suffer. He would be praying L'shem Shamayim, that the Malchus of Hashem should be established in the world. And this is what Rav Kook said. Again, it's a very, very autobiographical pshat. Again, if you know about Rav Kook's life, you know that Rav Kook indeed struggled against all sorts of movements and people against Yiddishkeit, but he always approached even them with a great deal of love and care and compassion. And as a result, he was zocha to bring many to Hashem. But again, as they say, to this day, it's still very, very controversial. Rav Kook is a controversial person. Some sectors are still mavaza him, which is very, very bad. Other sectors, like the mainstream issue, will just ignore him, which is not as bad as being mavaza him, but it's a little bit of a chisorin. Okay. Anyway, be well, have a good week, and Be'ezrat Hashem. Well, maybe we're not going to have to fast on Tuesday. The Mikdash could come the next 2 days, but if we do have to fast, may our tainus help bring Klal Yisrael to the Imos HaMashiach.
Can I say a question to Rabbanu?
Yeah, okay.